Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the May 28th, 2020 meeting of the Judicial Branch Budget Committee. We're pleased to be coming to you both audio and video. And if members of the public are watching, I think we'd be interested in your experience of this afterwards. So maybe let us know if how this works as a format. Before we start, let me ask Ms. Cowan to take the roll.
Okay, Judge Rubin?
I'm here.
Judge Mormon?
I'm here.
Judge Botke?
I'm here.
Justice Fujisaki?
Here.
Justice Hill?
Here.
Judge Hopp?
Here.
Mr. Roddy?
I'm here.
And Ms. Wallen-Roman?
Here.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, we're all here. So let me just remind everybody, the meeting is open to the public and we are being recorded. As I've stated, we're doing this via video conference and members of the public can actually watch the meeting, but they can only listen. They won't be able to participate or jump in on the screen. For members of the committee, if I could ask you to mute and unmute yourself when you're talking. In other words, keep yourself muted if you're not speaking, and then when you want to speak, go ahead and unmute and chime in. And because I can see you, you can raise your hand. I can actually call on you individually, unlike a phone call when I have to kind of go around the room to make sure I pick up everybody. We don't need to say who we are when we start because our names are at the bottom of our pictures, but staff who are speaking should remember to provide their name before they begin speaking because we can't always see them. We can hear them, but we wouldn't want to know who they are. Now, I want to say to everybody, because of this is sort of new to us, many of us are on multiple screens. And so for us to see the materials about which we're speaking, we have them on separate screens off our right or to our left. And so you will see people during the meeting looking one way or the other. They are not doing email or answering correspondence, they're actually looking at the materials for the meeting. And so you'll be seeing that from time to time, and that's what that is. So let's move into the business part of the meeting. And we've had an opportunity now to look at the minutes for November 15th, December 19th, and April 21 of 2020. And is there a motion to approve?
This is Judge Mormon. I'll move to approve all three sets of minutes.
All right. Okay. We have a motion. All right. And who's the second? Is that Hal?
Yes.
All right. Second is Hal. Judge Hopp. All right. There's a motion and a second. Is there a discussion? Seeing and hearing none.
Judge.
Wait a second. Yes. I see. I'm sorry. Justice Fujisaki. Go ahead.
Hi. I just need to recuse myself from the December 19th. Approval of the minutes because I was not there.
All right, we have one abstention.
Just on the December 19 Joint Court Facilities Advisory and JBBC meeting.
All right, if I can have a staff reflect when we do the vote that as to that meeting, Justice Fujisaki is registering a abstention.
Yeah.
All right, anybody else? All right, great. Seeing no discussion, further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, and then absent the abstention we've already discussed, any other abstentions? All right, there are none. The motion passes. All right. Hang on a second. All right, now let's move on to the next item. This is an information item before we get into a voting item. And what I think we've all been, or if we haven't been watching the recent hearings at the legislature, we've certainly been reading about them and we've been tracking very closely what's going on in Sacramento. Nobody's been tracking it more closely than John Wardlaw and Zlatko Theodorovich and Fran Mueller, who are all with us. And I thought what we would do is we would start with them and have them give us an update on the status of the 2021 budget and how things are looking. So if I could turn it over to them.
Judge Rubin, this is Angela.
Yes.
I apologize. I just want to take one step back. I just wanted to mention that there was no written public comment received for the meeting.
I'm sorry. Is there public comment?
There is no written public comment received.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. I went by that. Thank you. All right. There's no written public comment. And because of the way we're conducting the meeting, it has to come in writing. So thank you for that, Ms. Cowan. Now, back to Mr. Wardlaw, Mr. Theodorovich, and Ms. Mueller. Is Ms. Mueller here? I don't see her, but...
Very good morning, Judge. Yes, I am here.
There you are. All right. Go ahead. I turn it over to you.
Okay. Good morning, Judge. This is John Wardlaw speaking. Good morning, committee members. I hope you're doing well. With regard to the condition of the state budget, since the last time we met in April, the governor has released his May revise. As we had expected, the governor has pulled back significantly on all areas of government. In fact, he has taken it further than scaling back, but actually there are a number of proposed reductions in the budget. I'll defer to Mr. Theodorovich to give you details on that. But generally speaking, the economic climate is one in which there is a significant budget hole projected for next year. All major streams of revenue are significantly down to the tune of about $54.3 billion, which has forced the governor to exercise a plan of reduction statewide, and that has been communicated to the legislature. The legislature is now having their conversations. Both houses are in the thick of reviewing the governor's proposals and identifying their priorities. I think we are on track for a June 15th budget. All signs are leading toward both houses passing the budget timely. As we had talked about earlier, this year's tax season has been deferred from April 15th to July 15th. And so while this budget contemplates some fairly significant reductions statewide, as those revenues are looked at in July as tax season comes to close, we would expect that the legislature and the governor may again revisit the budget as they are more informed on the economic picture for the next year. All parties would indicate that the length of this particular recession, as they're calling it now, duration-wise is anywhere between 18 months and 3 years is the current projection. So if you were watching the hearings, you would see the LAO is projecting a fairly deep, long tenure on the recession. The projections out of UCLA are a shorter duration, and so we'll see that I think the governor's general plan is a extended period of reduction. With that, there is some recognition within our budget of the significant backlogs that we are facing as a branch. The governor has included $50 million to address the significant COVID-related backlog being experienced by the trial courts. You're also seeing there's $25 million for modernization efforts, primarily for IT, as it's going to be a significant player with regard to improving access to justice in the future. So with that, I'll take a pause and hand it over to Zlatko Theodorovich to provide more detail on budget.
Great. Thank you, John, and I appreciate you having me this morning. We have a budget hearing that's occurring right now in the Senate. I'll get to that in a minute. But in terms of some of the detail from the May revision, as we know, the budget needed to be proposed as a balanced budget. There were reductions to the branch operational of over $200 million for 2021 that are direct to operational issues. Over $15 million in individual reductions. And then as the budget is being looked at as a two-year proposal, there are actually additional reductions in 21-22, almost $39 million that are proposed. We had some important investments that were originally in the governor's budget pulled back. In particular, there were issues regarding cost of doing business and workload funding that were not continued in the budget of over $107 million. A number of other priority issues for the chief was related to port navigators and issues like that that did not remain in the budget. And so, again, these are issues that are being grappled with now in the legislature that the administration made their proposal. And so in terms of where we are in, as far as process, the Senate met on Wednesday of last week, left a couple of issues open. They basically adopted much of the framework of the administration at that time and had left open the issue of the reductions and the issue of the $25 million for modernization funding. We were at the ready to participate in that meeting, but ultimately there was no testimony that we provided in support of the proposed budget. Thursday was a meeting of the Assembly in which there was no departmental or branch or any other entity involved, and it was focused on just going through the budget. The Department of Finance and legislative analysts provided their views on those on the proposal. The LAO has been, they had some concerns about how reductions were being allocated, suggested that reductions to the trap ports be looked at in the frame of different levels of funding, those that are viewed as having more funding, maybe taking different parts of the cuts. They were recommending rejection of the $25 million for IT and the modernization, seeing that it was not known with any details to what that would be for, and had concerns about the $50 million that were for the backlog. And so ultimately, those two committees met, subcommittees met, and on Tuesday, there was an unprecedented meeting of the Assembly called the Committee of the Whole. And the intent there was to provide the opportunity for every member to hear about the budget from the Department of Finance directly and the legislative analysts. They both made presentations, and every member was afforded an opportunity to ask questions, and they went through the budget and expressed their concerns about the reductions. There was some concern a little bit expressed as far as some of the access to justice reductions that were made and proposed in the budget. And then today we have the Senate hearing. They are, as an overall budget framework, looking to depart from the governor, and whereas the governor had budget reductions they call trigger cuts, in fact, they were proposed to be initiated on July 1st, and then to the extent that there's federal money that came, they would undo those reductions. Well, the Senate is taking a different structure in which they are not doing the cuts and only would trigger the cuts in October if federal funding is not forthcoming. They are supportive in the committee today of the $25 million for a two-year period, 25 in each year. So we appreciate that, you know, that that's being recognized. They did approve the $50 million in the backlog funding. And so we are heading towards, you know, that period where there's going to be eventual reconciliation of the two houses. We don't know when they will meet to vote. We understand that there'll be one vote for the Assembly, and then ultimately there'll need to be some sort of single bill coming to the floors by the 15th for vote. It is an unprecedented time, and so we're really tracking the hearing process, which is been unlike any other ever in my 23 years of state budgeting. And so I think that you know, we're all being very nimble right now, issues we're tracking and the different approaches that the houses may take their discussions with the administration. So I think what that does is that really sets up a good framework for us to have a conversation today in terms of backdrop of where the budget is. We last met. We weren't sure where we were going, but we were well aware of the issues that were being raised globally, and I think that we have our work cut out for us, but I think it's been very much framed in a very narrow view as far as what we think might be worthy of going forward for the next fiscal year. So if there's any questions about where we're at, I'm more than happy to take those.
Go ahead.
And this is to either John or Zlatko. Has there been any budget trailer bill language proposed, and are there any significant policy changes there that might affect our branch?
In terms of trailer bill, there has been one proposal raised in the Senate as it relates to a misdemeanor diversion program. That was not something that was raised in the Assembly. So we're still, we just got a draft of that and provided some feedback to criminal justice services as far as what's going on with that. But it, we don't know if it's going to land. But again, it's just one house. We'll see where we are in terms of ultimately where that's going. I would say in terms of any other trailer bill issues, the only thing that really is in play right now would be the ability to pay proposal, in which we had our own version of the trailer bill. And there's been some interest from advocates to try and change some of the parameters of the, that program expansion, kind of make it a little bit more inclusive, change some of the standards by which the program operates. But that's really it as far as any significant trailer bills.
Zlatko, there is one piece that I think this committee would be interested in relative to the innovation grants, the extension of duration for spending. The proposal is to have it available through December of this year, so that's good news on our behalf.
Right. So this is Dave. Well, you can see me. Yes. So I wanted to thank Mr. Wardlaw, Mr. Theodorovic for handling that. We've been talking about it for a little bit, and thank you for that. That will be, I think, welcome news to the trial courts. I have a question to either Mr. Wardlaw or Mr. Theodorovic, which is, we're talking about people are modeling this recession slightly differently. Do we have a sense of how many budget cycles will be impacted likely? Obviously, there's this budget cycle. How many more?
Yeah, that's a challenging question, Judge. The administration is signaling that they think it's at least a three-year budget cycle challenge on our hands. Whether or not the economy can recover quickly is really going to be the key on how long this challenge progresses.
Okay. More questions for our presenter? All right, seeing none, Mr. Theodorovic, Mr. Wardlaw, thank you very much. That was really, really helpful for us, especially as we now turn to the next part of our meeting, which is talking about the budget change concepts. I want to just review a little bit from last time. You'll recall that we had, first of all, it was a really stellar list of concepts that had come in to us. It was really, really good, and each one of them was really significant. Sadly, we were as somewhat aware of the budget environment that we were in, and we made some really, really difficult choices. And you'll recall we had six or so that we were green lighting to go forward. The technology, the Judicial Branch Technology Committee, JCTC, had called back theirs and wanted to do a little more work on theirs, and they will be with us today to talk about the two they are coming back forward with. And then there was a set that we just felt like needed to be deferred, as important as they were and as painful as that was to do. My suggestion is maybe we revisit, I would ask Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodorovic maybe to walk us through kind of those that we already approved to see if, you know, what the new, now that we know more about the budget environment, what that looks like, and maybe talk, kind of give us our opinions about viability, and then ask someone to do a little presentation on the BCCs for the technology side, unless somebody feels differently about that order of play. I think it's a sports analogy, but I'm not sure. Okay, great. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. All right, with that, let's turn it over then to back to Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodorovic.
Yes, Rocket, you want to take lead on walking us through the list?
Absolutely, absolutely, John. We can do that. Let me just make sure I'm pulling up my right materials. Okay, so as Judge Rubin described, the materials you have that are on page 11 starts the listing of the issues, and so they're broken up into three sections, and I'll just sort of describe that the bottom below the second blue line are all those items that were deferred, for potential review in light of what was coming in the May revision, and we would definitely support the notion that those continue to be deferred. Very unlikely that, you know, there would be any appetite for those given where we're at. In terms of the remaining issues, we think are still worthy of consideration by the committee. We've had a conversation internally about the Prop 66. If you recall, at your last meeting, you combined both the Courts of Appeal request and the HCRC request, as well as trying to fold in the trial courts. Laura Speed and her team have done work, and the numbers that you have before you represent the HCRC and Courts of Appeal issues. Trial court issues, we see still sort of an out-year issue, and trying to determine those, there's still not a lot of workload, but we think that there's some viability and ability to look at the HCRC estimates. While, again, with the Courts of Appeal, they are hypothetical situations that are best, you know, informed by the group. There's still some uncertainty about whether those will materialize at that level. But notwithstanding any of that, we think it's still worthy of moving forward, given that the Prop 66 is the law, and we need to attempt to comply as best we can. If there are any questions, maybe I'll just go through the list, Judge Rubin, and then if someone wants to pause, I'm more than happy to do that.
Ms. Lacco, just briefly, as the committee contemplated the broader list back in April, there was general consideration on what constitutes baseline activities, basically not growing, but being able to keep court operations operational. And so I think the first cut was based on what is the ability to continue to provide services as we have service levels that we have now, not growing. And as many of the proposals that were deemed not ready to move forward at this point, given the significant economic downturn, kind of overlaying, you know, there are lots of meritorious issues here, but in a no-growth budget environment, that was kind of the context used in looking at the list and shaping it to where we have it today. My recommendation is that we would continue on that path, given the economic climate we're in.
Well, I guess, and I think as we go along, maybe Mr. Theodorovic and Mr. Wardlaw, right, it'd be nice to maintain, but if we think that we need to shave even further, you would let us know.
Will do, Judge.
All right. And go ahead, Mr. Theodorovic, if you wanted to continue down the list.
Absolutely. So the next issue, if you recall, was there's the self-help funding of $19.1 million was provided on a three-year limited term basis. There is a report required at the end of the expenditure period. We believe that it's worthy to continue to request the ongoing funding of 19.1 starting in 2021-22. Otherwise, this would be a reduction in services. And I've had some preliminary conversations with Department of Finance staff, and they are looking forward to the outcome of the report, which to me gives some indication that there would be openness to seeing this, and since it is hopefully a continuation of the funding, it would be something that would be received despite the context of the budget. So that, I think, is a critical one that we should continue to pursue. The next is the insolvency of the State Court of Facilities Construction Fund. That is an absolute necessary continuation issue for us to pursue. That fund would be insolvent, and we currently would only have revenues to support fund costs for debt service. There would be no resources for facility modifications or any of the staff at the Judicial Council that support the overall facilities and construction program. So that's definitely an issue that we should continue to pursue, in my opinion. Next is facility operations and maintenance funding. Again, another critical issue. This was something that had interest and was identified in the original governor's budget in January as being something that they were interested in looking at. We think in the instance of looking at limited numbers of budget changes going to the Department of Finance, that to the extent there is any opportunity for funding, that something like this would merit being remaining in front of the Department of Finance, given the need to have safe and operating facilities and go forward. Next issue is the inflationary adjustment for trial courts. And despite the budget reductions that were included in the budget and the pullback of the $60 million that was for cost increases, we again think that this is an issue of these cost increases will continue. And again, given the context of potential maybe improvement in the economy, we would definitely like to have this something before the administration, identifying this as a need, to the extent that there's resources to support it. Next is the various capital outlay projects. Previously, we had specific dollar amounts in that because we were unsure as to what extent the May revision would maintain any of the resources that were initially proposed in the governor's budget. We call those a $2 billion set aside for capital projects. The May revision removes that $2 billion, and given the changing landscape of court operations, we think that it's something that the CFAC would need to look at the court facilities advisory committee, looking at a re-look at the five-year capital outlay plan, and so that's why we changed it to a TBD. But again, this is an issue of to the extent that there's an opportunity to have some reinvestment in the branch, we would like to have this as one of the items that would be considered by the administration. So those are the items that were specifically discussed and recommended from the last meeting to continue to this date and for us to review. I believe we have Heather Pettit on as well to talk about the process and the items that are in the green, which were sort of the deferral of IT items from the prior meeting. I think we had a presentation that said they were going to revisit the five items that they had previously on the list, and they're going to come back to the committee with a recasting of their IT needs. But hopefully Heather is available to do a brief overview of those for the committee, since they are new proposals from the last time we met.
Ms. Pettit, are you there?
I am available and here. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Excellent. Perfect. Thank you so much. When we met with the committee last time, one of the things that JCTC felt it really important to do was go back and evaluate what we had submitted originally, because when we did that initial analysis, it was in terms of the old world, not necessarily the new world that we're all living in today. And because technology has become such a huge part of this new world and how we offer services to the public, it was really critical for us to evaluate what the real needs of the court are today and going forward in this space. So in order to do that, we took all of our original kind of priorities that we had, and we met with the chairs of both ITAC and JCTC, as well as all the CIOs from ITAC, to talk through what was really happening, what their priorities are. And so that was a mix of small courts, medium-sized courts, and large courts to kind of get a feel for what they're doing with technology in today's world, the spacing, remote kind of proceedings and whatnot. And so in our discussions, there were a couple of things that became very evident that are pretty much mission critical for us to get to that place in the digital core. So through all of it, the first one, of course, was security. As we know, this has been a hot topic right now. We're getting hit hard with security. And then the other were the virtual courthouse. And so our new proposals that we submitted are surrounding those particular areas that focus on what we believe are critical needs for us to achieve the digital court, especially in the world that we're living in today. So the first proposal is security. This is something that we've been working on with the Department of Technology. We've partnered with the Office of Emergency Services, as well as the state CISO, the state security officer, aligning with the work that they're doing as well, collaborating and partnering with them, really just to enhance our security posture. This new world has created a lot of new challenges for us, and so we want to make sure that we are prepared and we mitigate risk as much as possible. So that proposal really focuses on being the security, and it was the opinion of the JCTC that security continues to be the number one real go forward for all the work that we're doing, including the data-driven work that we're doing and so forth. So it's really just to enhance that world. The second one, though, really focuses on the world of the digital courthouse. And I say not just court, I specifically say courthouse because there are key components that we have learned about over the last 3 months, like a remote workforce. How do we get them to be able to do the work, process filings? Because it isn't, I mean, a lot of the work we do is in the courtroom, but it also is from the moment that the litigant provides those papers to initiate their case. And so having those discussions about what a digital courthouse looks like became really, really important. So this BCC focuses specifically on courthouse services, including remote technology. So for if you would like to show that you have, let's say we have nobody working at the traffic courthouse, if you wanted to show that you've got your proof of insurance, there is a mechanism for you to remotely do that and go through the process of mitigating your tickets, whatever the case may be. The other one is digital evidence. Having the ability to submit documents to the court in a format, in a secured way that allows the court to continue its proceedings. This is one of the things that we learned from the Innovations Grant at Placer, that it's great to have remote technology in a courtroom, but if you don't have a mechanism for the evidence to be digital as well, where all parties can gain access to it, it becomes a challenge. So that was something that was really important. And again, there's a theme throughout this is that whatever technology we're using in the courthouse or the courtroom, we want to be able to use it for administrative functions as well. So the solution for digital evidence should be no different than somebody submitting their proof of insurance for a traffic. So it's the same types of technology that we're talking about using. The next one, which was part of our original funding request that was supposed to be in the governor's budget, which was the data-driven forms and workflow. If a litigant can't get the forms into the court to be able to process them, how do we continue the process of the actual case? And so that was something that we really need to continue to focus on, getting the data into the case management systems, redoing our judicial counsel form. So we thought that that was critical as well. And then the last one, which also stems from an innovations grant from Los Angeles, was a statewide case index. If I am a litigant and I want to be able to pull information right now, I either have to go to the courthouse or I have to go to the individual county site, and they may or may not have case information. But having a case index can allow them to go to one place, grab their information, and then it will route them to their particular county that they would want to do. So again, it's how do we provide these virtual digital services for the public, our staff, judges? It's our whole ecosystem of court users, and so that's what this BCP focuses on. So does anybody have any questions?
All right, let me open that up to questions. Judge Hopp.
Yeah, I probably should remember the answer to this, but I don't. How does item 2106, number 13 on the list, IT modernization for the Supreme Court and Courts of Appeal, if at all, relate to the two things that we've got in green on the list?
So the one for the Courts of Appeal was specifically for systems that relate to the Courts of Appeal and Supreme Court, enhancing their case management system. It was more system-driven. These services that we're talking about in this new version of the virtual courthouse absolutely apply to them because it's the same types of technology, but we're not focusing on individual items. However, I do think that there is a way that we can leverage that. So a lot of the work we're doing with remote appearances, we've rolled out specifically to the Courts of Appeal because they need the same technology, right? Same thing with digital evidence. If you think about it, we're talking about right now a lot of cases that are coming up. If we had a way to bring all that information electronically between the courts and the Courts of Appeal, how much easier would that be? We wouldn't be scanning documents, right? And so these are underlying technologies that help the whole branch specifically as opposed to just one area of the branch. And that was one of the things that, you know, this work group, this kind of quick get together for a couple of hours over the last couple of weeks trying to figure this out. And we literally just put this together, you know, last week. We felt like whatever proposal we were going to give to the state, it needed to be reflective of us as a branch holistically. It cannot be for one individual. It needs to be something that we can leverage as a branch, small courts, big courts, courts of appeal, and the Supreme Court. And so that's really what this focuses on those pieces of technology and ones that we've done a lot of work in already, that we've had work streams, we have some deliverables, we know what where we're going. So that was kind of how we leveled, lifted these up to be the higher priorities, especially in today's world. Hope that answers your question.
That's a great answer. Thank you. We asked Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodorovic, what, if any, relationship might these tech BCCs have to, say, the $25 million that is being contemplated for technology improvement? How do they work together, or do they?
Yeah, thank you, Judge. This is John Wardlaw. And the intent of the legislature really was the very very same things that Ms. Pett is outlining are what the exec branch, the governor, was envisioning with the $25 million. So that what's been proposed is $25 million on an ongoing basis for court modernization. And so my recommendation on this would be, depending on how the legislature ultimately acts with respect to that $25 million ongoing, should influence whether or not we move this proposal or set of proposals forward. The governor's intent is that the things that are identified here in both proposals would be the types of things that would be covered with the ongoing $25 million.
I would agree. We there was a document that was provided to the legislature that it identifies use of video for hearings and interpretation, data analytics, business information, digital documents, IT security. And so those are absolutely in line with the items that are proposed before you. And we'd be hopeful that they remain in the budget. And that means that then we have a pool of resources to do the kinds of things that these two specific issues would be addressing.
All right. Outstanding. More questions then from anybody? All right, I'm not seeing any. Ms. Pettit, thank you. That was great. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, very well. All right. As Mr. Theodorovic talked about, there's that third tranche, if you will, of items we've already gone over. Does anybody feel a need to pull anything off of that and discuss it, or are we – I'm still content with where we are. I'm getting contentment. Okay. All right. Let's talk about let me ask a question to Mr. Wardlaw and Mr. Theodorovic. In terms of a go forward, it would seem like what Ms. Pettit is proposing, it seems to me like that is the right way forward. Now, whether we go by BCP or the budget comes with that $25 million already folded in, would it not make sense? Could we add that to what we have if we wanted, and that wouldn't be a problem, or would it be? We'd have to find two to pull out.
I don't see a problem should the committee want to move those two proposals forward. That said, to the extent that we get that $25 million on an ongoing basis, I strongly recommend that we pull that set of proposals back. Clearly, the administration has been clear that their expectation is that this $25 million would be ongoing, and that they would see limited requests coming forward, and expectation that we are managing within that pool of $25 million.
So what I think you might do is adopt language that would direct that based on the outcome of the budget, those items would either stay or not stay going to the council. And that's something that we could just adjust based on the final outcome. We could report back to you as far as what it is that the final budget act has relative to those $25 million.
Okay. And it does sound, at least to me, Mr. Theodorovic and Mr. Wardlaw, that at least as we went through the original, I guess it's six, let me pull it up. The original six, that we, it seems like we really got that right. I don't see a lot of room for change in that unless either the two of you do or somebody else on the committee does. It feels like we got that about right.
Judge, I'm in agreement with you. I think the priorities that were set in April remain. And I think you have narrowed it down to essential priorities of the branch. And I think that the administration will understand and recognize. And while there may be not be money in the foreseeable future, I think it is important still to present the branch priorities and, in essence, be in line when resources become available. It's important to set what the branch priorities continue, despite whether or not there's actual resources for it. There's a message to be sent, and I think you've done that in the list.
I would agree.
Yeah, the committee did really good, I think the committee did great work, I think, last time in assessing kind of where we were headed.
Judge Rubin, if I may, with regard to that $25 million for information technology, that particular item has received a bit of attention by both houses. The Senate is currently proposing, rather than ongoing, it be on a two-year basis, and so that's where the Senate is right now. On the Assembly side, they have held it open. As proposed, no vote at this time, but there have been members that have identified it as a Assemblymember Stone, for example, has on record said, you know, he doesn't think that $25 million should be purposed for that purpose, and it should be pulled in different directions. So the outcome of that $25 million is uncertain at this point. We're hopeful that the governor's proposal will prevail, but there are different views going on right now on that $25 million.
Which I guess speaks to the wisdom of when we get there, a motion that talks about the flexibility of if this is where the committee goes, to include the two tech proposals, and if the $25 million survives the budget process, to pull them back, have the council let Martin and the chief pull them back, or Mr. Oshino and the chief pull them back, or we
withdraw.
However, all right, perfect. Any other comments or a motion, anybody? Or a motion, anybody?
So this is Judge Mormon. I'll move to advance forward to the council BCP numbers 2118 and 2125 with our recommendation that if the $25 million for technology is included in the final budget, that Mr. Hoshino be given authority to withdraw.
Does your motion also include advancing to the BCP process and then to the council items 2105/2123, 2109, 2111, 2112, 13, and 22?
Yes. Yes. I thought we'd handled that last time, but yes, it does.
I would second that.
All right. That's a motion by Judge Mormon and a second by Justice Hill. Opening up now to further discussion. Any further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye.
Abstention? All right, it passes unanimously. And as has been our practice and as we initiated, we don't prioritize further to give the chief and Mr. Oshino maximum flexibility in their conversations with the Department of Finance and give Mr. Wardlaw, Mr. Theodorovic room to maneuver, and they, as the conversations develop, especially in such a dynamic budget environment, it gives, I think, us the maximum effort at success, or maximum ability for success. And again, we tip our hat to Justice Hill, who brought us that concept last year. So thank you for that, and that's how we'll present to the council at the next meeting. All right, thank you. If I'm reading my schedule correctly, hang on a second.
All right. We are going to now adjourn our open session. We're going to take, it's about 9:45. We'll take a 10-minute recess, and then we'll come back in at 9:55 and do our closed session. Thank you.
Recording has stopped.